the bailout of the Titans.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Bob Moon. It's official, the giant mortgage underwriters Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac are being taken over by the government. The move could potentially cost taxpayers $200 billion, but it could also help reverse the housing and credit crisis. Treasury Secretary Henry Paulson says the cost of allowing the companies to fail could take an even higher toll on our wallets. On the line to help us understand this move is Thomas Stanton, who teaches about Fannie and Freddie at Johns Hopkins University. Thanks for joining us.
Sure. Glad to be here.
Why did the government have to take this action, and why now?
The government had to step in because Fannie and Freddie were undercapitalized and were under immense stress. And what we've learned from past bank and savings and loan failures is that when management comes under that kind of pressure, they may feel the need to do something imprudent, take a big risk to try to recoup their losses.
Has the government maneuvered correctly here? This seems to have been a pretty delicate dance.
I think the government has done an excellent job. Secretary Paulson has essentially stepped in and figured out a way to reassure both the financial markets, and particularly foreign investors in Fannie's and Freddie's debt obligations, mortgage-backed securities, and also assure that Fannie and Freddie continue to provide and be a conduit for federal support. There's a second step to this process. The business model of this half-public, half-private, government-sponsored enterprise has failed us, and failed us pretty badly. The Treasury's powers to do what they're doing go away December 31, 2009. Secretary Paulson basically tossed the problem back to Congress and said, Congress, you have got to decide where we're going with these two huge multi-trillion dollar institutions.
So there's this question hanging out there. What happens now? Let me run past you something Secretary Paulson said.
It would not have been in the best interest of taxpayers for the Treasury to simply make an equity investment in these enterprises in their current form.
And then he went on to say there's a consensus that these enterprises cannot continue in their current form. Doesn't that kind of ensure that share prices aren't going to do well now because investors have to keep wondering and worrying about the future of these two firms?
Investors in Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac really enjoyed the benefit of immense leverage that these companies had. In 2002, and this is an extreme example, Freddie Mac recorded a return on equity of 47%. Leverage was great when things were good, and now investors have gotten hurt by the leverage when things are bad. It just moves in reverse. Shareholders are in a little bit of trouble here, and that's because they invested in thinly capitalized companies that took on a huge amount of risk.
Thomas Stanton of Johns Hopkins University, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
This U.S. government move is going over well with European investors. Stocks rose the highest since the start of the year. As Megan Williams reports, Europeans are also enjoying the irony of this development.
It didn't take long after the U.S. government announcement it will take over America's two biggest mortgage finance companies for the stock market to rebound in Europe. The European bank that suffered most subprime losses, UBS AG, has rebounded 11%. In German trading, the beleaguered Citigroup rose more than 6%. Fannie Mae and Freddie Mac didn't rise. Both shares fell dramatically in Germany. German business correspondent Tobias Piller says Europe is relieved that the U.S. has placed a floor under failures, and there's now less insecurity about the future. But he also says Europe, with a history of more government safety nets than the U.S., is somewhat amused by the U.S. move.
Even Bush is now becoming somebody who is nationalizing parts of the economy. Some people are saying this tongue-in-cheek and laughing a little bit about Bush.
I'm Megan Williams for Marketplace.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Constellation Energy, global provider of fuels, power, and energy services. Committed to sound, efficient, sustainable energy solutions. Constellation.com. By Farrar, Straus, and Giroux, publishers of the new book by Thomas L. Friedman, Hot, Flat, and Crowded, Why We Need a Green Revolution and How It Can Renew America, wherever books are sold. And by the Society for Human Resource Management, meeting the challenges of a changing world. Online at shrm.org.
Just last week, we told you about Coca-Cola's big plans in China. The iconic American drinkmaker announced plans to buy the dominant Chinese fruit juice company for $2.5 billion. Well, this weekend, new questions about the deal, shall we say, bubbled up. From Shanghai Marketplace's Scott Tong reports.
China just rolled out a new law to guard against business monopolies. And Sunday, regulators said they'd test it out on the Coke deal, which would be the largest ever foreign takeover of a Chinese firm. But many bloggers aren't happy about the buyout. They've been venting. It's a case of a domestic company selling out its hardship and sweat to foreigners. Business consultant Robert Kapp is the former head of the U.S.-China Business Council.
They're uneasy when very, very large foreign companies move into China and, as they see it, nip in the bud the growth possibilities for certain Chinese enterprises that they think have the capacity to become world beaters themselves.
Coke's proposed Chinese partner praised the deal Saturday, calling it good for Chinese workers. But some in the online community don't buy it. They think Coke is pulling the strings here. If the deal dies, some would consider it sweet revenge against the U.S. 3 years ago, congressional opposition killed the plan by a Chinese oil company to buy an American one. In Shanghai, I'm Scott Tong for Marketplace.
And finally, following up on a story we told you about several weeks ago, about the battle over New York's Coney Island. That's the place where hot dogs, soft ice cream, and roller coasters got their start. Coney Island's been zoned for amusement park rides exclusively, but you may recall we spoke to developer Margaret Tobin, who wants to build hotels and add retail stores.
We really, truly believe that retail is one of the important mixes there. I know from my nieces, shopping for them is entertainment, and it is amusing.
Well, it looks like Nike Town is winning out over nostalgia. Coney Island's world-famous amusement park closed its gates last night for what the owner insists is the last time because she couldn't negotiate a new lease. And already, some of the rides are up for sale on the Internet. What goes around comes around. The merry-go-rounds going around for $95,000. I'm Bob Moon in Los Angeles. We invite your comments at marketplace.org. And thanks very much for listening this morning.
American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.